You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia broadcasting live from Jamaica, Mon. Yes, I am in Kingston, Jamaica, and my lovely co-host, Paula Lazan, is broadcasting live from Boston, Massachusetts tonight also. Paula, how are you doing?
Doing great. Weather up here in Boston is 37, overcast skies and windy. And according to FlightAware.com, inbound flights delayed at their origin an average of an hour due to low clouds. The delays, departure delays, an average of 30 minutes. So other than that, seems to be so-so.
Wow. Well, it's only 30 degrees here in lovely Kingston, Jamaica. I'm sorry, 30 degrees Celsius.
Celsius.
That would be 86 Fahrenheit, yes. It was a beautiful day down here. You know, we come in and there's sort of a mountain line ridge that before we head on over towards the bay. And, boy, we could see the airport for a long ways off. I mean, I've not seen it that far off in a long time. So, of course, I haven't been here in a long time, but in the old days when I used to fly in here in a 757, you didn't see it that far off. It was just a beautiful day. And so it was nice. So I'm glad to be here. And we're coming up on Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there tomorrow. We're going to start off here in a minute or so with some humor. Paul's always got some good humor lined up for us. But first I want to throw this out. If you want to call in tonight, the phone number is 310-982-4145. And, of course, you can always catch up with us on usaradionetwork.com. That's the official website. We're going to start posting some YouTube videos on there. I'm going to start doing some Constitution lessons on various things that apply today, discussing things in those terms, just like we do on the radio show. But they're going to be little, you know, 4, maybe 5-minute clips, so they're quick and easy, and you can forward them on to people versus telling them, hey, go listen to the show. It was a great show. And then they've got an entire hour, sometimes hour and a half show to listen to, which we'd love you to do, but it's a quick and easy way to get folks involved and paying attention to what's going on. You can also follow us on Twitter. Go to the American Hour on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, maybe you're on Facebook. Go to the American Hour Radio Show page. So you're going to do a search for a page called the American Hour Radio Show, and you can find us there. And, of course, you can always follow Paula on Twitter as well at the Megawatt Queen. So those are some places you can find out more about what's going on. So, Paula, you got some funny stuff for us, political stuff?
Got some funny political stuff for you, the Tonight Show with Jay Letterman. Herman Cain is the first Republican presidential candidate to get Secret Service protection. The level of protection a candidate gets depends on how well known they are. For example, John Huntsman gets a 10-minute judo lesson and a plastic whistle.
John who? Oh, yeah.
You know what? He's gonna be someone on someone's vice presidential ticket. Don't write that man off.
He could be. Yeah. Because he's about a step above Joe Biden.
Oh.
No, I like him. But there's just way too many things that I could argue with that guy about. But yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Keep going.
I can see a Gingrich Huntsman ticket.
Gingrich just lost any chance of winning now, and we'll talk about that later, but his immigration discussion in the debate, I guess, last night, I'm going to talk about that, but he just torpedoed himself.
Late Show with David Letterman, when are these Republican debates going to stop? I mean, this would be the very reason to call for dictatorship, just to put an end to these.
Well, David, we do have a dictatorship. It's called President Obama.
Or Bumbler, as you so refer to him from time to time.
Yeah. I tweeted a few old Bumblers out today.
Bumbler. Gingrich wants to repeal child labor laws. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the man that we need to lead us into the 18th century. Jimmy Kimmel Live. This is the 14th Republican debate, and there are still 12 more to go. The plan, I think, is to keep debating until somebody recognizes Rick Santorum on the street.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
I like Rick Santorum.
I like him.
Do. He just...
But I really like Ron Paul.
Yeah, you know, they've all got some flaws, and I just have to decide which are the worst flaws. And I'm still sticking with Herman Cain here, but, you know, I'm going to be honest. I think Romney's going to end up – I mean, there's so many things that can change. You just can't predict at this point, but I think Romney's going to end up with the nomination, quite honestly. And that won't break my heart. You know, you can complain. I spoke with a good friend of mine today, Mark Vance, about Romney Care and the Constitution. This guy knows the Constitution really well. Whenever I want to make sure I'm on track and I'm not really veering off the train rail there, I always call Mark Vance, and he makes sure I stay on. But, you know, we were pretty much in agreement. And we've talked about on the show before, and I'll just say this. The states have the authority to impose something like Romney Care. The federal government doesn't. So what Romney did, hey, the states were intended to be test beds for things like that. They gave it a shot. If it doesn't work, it's real easy at the state level to go, nah, we're not doing this anymore. It wasn't working. It's so hard to stop that train when it's at the federal level, and it's so dangerous because it becomes such a dangerous, permanent precedent. And so the states need to try things out, and they tried it out, and they made some mistakes, but that's where we can learn from it. That was the whole idea. The whole idea in the beginning of the structure of our nation was the states had the freedom to work on social and civil issues. The federal government was supposed to stay out. That's the structure. But anyways, so we had a nice discussion about that. But anyway, I'm sticking with Herman Cain for now. I'm just so sick and tired of career politicians that I'm willing to vote for Herman Cain. Just because he's not a career politician. So say what you want about him, but he is a CEO, a multiple-time CEO. He understands that you can't know everything. You've got to surround yourself with smart people, which he has done in his campaign, because I have some insight into his campaign being part of it right now at the Florida level. But, and he's showing the same kind of – similar flaws that I made when I ran for Congress, not knowing anything about running for a office and doing it for the first time. I actually think he ran for Senate some years ago. So, but running for president, that's a huge thing. So, any case, he's got it. You know, I give him a little bit of slack there on that stuff. So, I'm sorry, Paula. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, the star of the debate was Herman Cain, and this is coming off, you know, these funnies that I get from Newsmax. And he didn't talk much because the debate was about national defense, and his area of expertise is pizza.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think pizza is very important to national defense. As a former Top Gun fighter pilot, I ate a lot of pizza when I was, you know, on the carrier, when I was getting ready to go fly, you know, missions, and when I was an air combat instructor, and when I'd get home. Pizza is great for our troops. Great. So, anyway.
Well, Mitt Romney admitted in an interview, I tasted a beer and tried a cigarette once as a wayward teenager and never did it again. This has the makings of the lamest behind the music special yet.
Well, you know, as a Mormon, I believe him that he gave something to try. A lot of Mormons do that. Give it a little try here just for the heck of it. You know, when you're a kid and you take a puff on a cigarette, you know, it's going to choke you, gag you. I did that twice in my life. I have never, ever smoked cigarettes since then, since I was a kid. Just one puff, try it again when I was a little older. There are a lot of Mormons out there that, yeah, they've given a little try. You know, the first time you taste the beer, I don't think anybody, quite honestly, as a kid, takes a sip of beer and says, oh my gosh, that's like cream soda. I love it. Just not going to happen. So, yeah, it's great. You know, you try. If you're not around it, you're growing up in that environment, and you just think, let me give it a try. It just reaffirms, you know, for somebody that wants to live a more strict lifestyle like that, that, you know what, it doesn't appeal to me. You know, it takes peer pressure and multiple usage to develop those kind of vices. So, anyway.
Well, if you think that's bad, John Huntsman is now admitting that in college he experimented with parting his hair to the left.
Now, that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
And last night was the 14th Republican presidential debate, or as our commander-in-chief has started calling them, campaign ads.
Yeah. Yeah, he's out running around campaigning while the country's on fire. And then he's saying, well, you know, Congress isn't doing its job. That's great. How about exercise some leadership? You know, George Washington, especially when this country was just formed, he stayed in the background, but he attended a lot of congressional hearings and meetings, and he put pressure on people like John Adams and other folks. You know, he had Jefferson as his – or no, actually, Jefferson was, I believe now I'm drawing a blank. He was either Washington's vice president for a little while or Adams. I think it was Washington for a while. He stayed present. He was there. He was visible. He pulled people aside, said, work this out, and here's how I feel about this. But he didn't stand up and pontificate. That's the one thing Washington did. And there's the difference. Obama, a no-experience, know-nothing leadership kind of guy, a community agitator. General George Washington fought a brilliant war and then was a brilliant president. And what did he do? He exercised true leadership as the president, the way it should be exercised. Obama could learn a lot from him. So anyway, yeah. All right, what else you got? Anything else?
I'm not sure Rick Perry understands Thanksgiving. When they asked him if he was going to deep fry a turkey, he said, well, if he's found guilty.
Hey, that's Texas for you. That's Texas. It's a different culture there.
It looks like the super committee chosen by President Obama to come up with a plan to solve the deficit has failed. The best idea they came up with? A bake sale. But don't worry, President Obama has announced a new plan. Next week he's appointing a super-duper committee.
I like that. You know, if that fails, it'll be a extra super-duper-duper committee. Yeah. This guy's good at creating committees, a committee for jobs, a committee for the economy. He's appointed all these committees, and what's turned up? High unemployment, economy faltering, dollar down. I mean, all he knows is form a committee. Let's talk about things. Yeah, he's totally incompetent, completely incompetent. He proves that on a daily basis.
Well, talking and doing are two different things as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and of course, you know, his campaign is whining and complaining about the Romney ad where they quote him as saying, if we're just going to stand around talking about the economy, it was taken out of context from an aide of John McCain. Now, here's the interesting thing. When Obama made that statement, he was attributing it to John McCain. It wasn't John McCain that ever said it. It was an aide. So is that a little deceptive? But all the libtards are out there going, oh, Romney's deceptive. That wasn't a Obama statement. Even though we hear Obama say it with his own lips, he's just repeating what McCain said. Oops, McCain didn't say it. It was an aide. I can tell you this right now. Aides don't speak for the campaign. You have a campaign spokesperson, yes. But an aide makes a statement, and now you're attributing that to the campaign? That's disingenuous. But where's the media on that one? Oh, no, Obama. Oh, Obama just, yeah. They're so hypocritical, so incredibly hypocritical. Anyway, that's the real story. But the media's all over this. Oh, it's a deceptive ad Romney's running. It's a deceptive ad about a deceptive statement that Obama made. There you go. Yeah. So and the other thing is, boy, you can't trust Romney. Boy, he ran that ad. You can't trust him. We got a president that lies every time he opens his mouth. What about Obamacare? Don't worry, you can keep your doctor. Don't worry, you can keep your insurance. Don't worry, it's going to save us money. Don't worry, it's not going to affect. Do you know that Obama has presented to the super committee that he would like Medicare cut another $200 million in addition to what Obamacare does to it? So remember the ads of Republican Congressman Paul Ryan pushing Granny over a cliff in a wheelchair?
Yes.
They're such lying sacks of you-know-what. It's like, oh, the Republicans, they just want to push Granny over. Well, Obama already cut half a billion. half a billion out of Medicare. Half a billion out of Medicare. Now he's asking for even deeper cuts. The Republicans aren't asking for any of that. The Republicans want to restore the half a million that was cut from Medicare, and they're not talking about additional cuts to Medicare. So he's up to, now Obama is up to $700 billion. I take that back. I keep jumping from billion to million. $700 million in cuts from Medicare. So here's the person that wants to destroy Granny, the Democrat Party, and President Barack Obama with his health care plan. And I've got a little something about that, about Obamacare and what it's really going to do to Granny, that will never make it to the mainstream media. But anyway, all right, ready to move on to some other stuff, Paula?
Ready to move on. I want to hear why you think Newt Gingrich is not kind of covered.
Okay, here's the deal. If he gets the nomination, I'll vote for him. I like Newt on a lot of things, but he trying to prove how compassionate he is. Here's what he said. He said, you can't be shipping families out of here or creating laws that cause families that have been here for generations, 10, 20, 25 years, sending them back to, and you know what we're really talking about is Mexico. You're going to destroy families. And then I saw on Fox News earlier, they didn't show the whole clip, but he said, breaking families apart. Let me tell you this, Paula. Immigration and naturalization services have never split families up, ever. Now, the Ilian Gonzalez case that was a Cuban in Miami where they took him away from his mother and sent him back, well, it was determined by our own government that she had snuck him out of Cuba, away from his father, and it was determined by a Cuban court, I believe, and I don't remember all the details. The bottom line is he was kidnapped. I take it back. It's his grandparents that had him. Actually, his grandparents. His biological father was in Cuba and wanted his son back. That's not tearing families apart like Gingrich talked about. What Gingrich is trying to get us, and this is what the libtards want you to imagine, that the parents of a family are told, you're illegal immigrants, but your kids, they're citizens. So you're going to go back to Mexico and your kids are going to stay here. They never make those decisions. Families make those decisions. If kids stay behind, it's because the parents said, we don't want you coming back to Mexico, you're staying here. That's their decision. Their kids, as far as Mexico is concerned, are Mexican citizens. They can all go as a family back to Mexico. So it's an outright lie by Newt Gingrich to say that we're tearing families apart. The Immigration and Naturalization Service has never torn one family apart. So it's a false premise, absolutely false premise that that's what's going on.
Well,
second of all,
why are we targeting Mexico and not countries around the world in general? Are we having a really great big issue with Mexico in general and not...
We're not targeting Mexico. We're targeting all illegal immigrants. But see, that's what the libtards want us to do, is turn it into us versus Mexico.
Okay.
The majority of illegal immigrants in our country come from Mexico because it's easy to walk across the border. But we have many, many, many illegal immigrants from all over Latin America and South America because they work their way up. And guess what? Mexico works very, very hard to keep anybody from the South coming into their country. Very hard. Their immigration policies, their border control is much more stringent than ours. But we're the evil, bad, anti-immigrant country. Go to Mexico, they're much more anti-immigrant. Much more anti-immigrant. Absolutely. So, the reason Mexico gets brought into this is because there's just a much greater proliferation, if you want to call it that, or just prominence of Mexicans in the United States, because it's just easy for... I live in Florida, and there's no border somebody can walk across. And there's not a... You know, people don't come across on a boat, etc. But they get into the country by flying in with a ticket and a visitor visa, and they overstay their visa. That's really where a lot of illegal immigrants outside of the Southwest come from. They also may hike, travel, do whatever it takes to get to Mexico, and then from Mexico come across the border. And then because there are a much larger percentage of Latin Americans in South Florida, they head straight over for South Florida or another state that has that. The Southwest is dominated by Mexicans, illegal Mexicans. So if you're from Mexico, tend to stick around in the Southwest, and now they're working their way up through the states, such as anywhere from Utah, which has sanctuary cities, California, on up into Washington State. And so what he's saying is, and we did this show where, no, we didn't. Let me see if I've got it here. I did this on Michael Cutler's show. I'm going to read to you a story that I wrote, and we thought we were going to get it published in a major news article, but a newspaper, but we didn't, entitled A Tale of Two Garcias. And this is going to explain why it is so important for these families to stay in the country, why they split themselves up when the parents get caught, and that sort of thing. So Newt completely misses the point on why it's important. He says, we're going to destroy. Now, Charles Krauthammer said tonight on Fox, he said, well, it's inhumane to send families back to Mexico after 25 years. Okay, what's the cutoff? Is it 10 years? Is it 5 years? Is it 2 years? Is it 6 years? What is it? What's the number? How do you say it's humane after 5 years, but it's inhumane after 25 years? I mean, what's the answer? And then A.B. Stoddard on the same show said, you know, we got these people that have been here a long time, and they're law-abiding citizens. A.B., they're not law-abiding citizens. They violated our sovereignty, our national sovereignty and immigration laws. They're criminals, and they're criminals as long as they stay here. So they're not law-abiding citizens. They're criminals. But let's see if I can find this article. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I think it's actually good. Here we go. The Tale of Two Garcias.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the one Garcia family is a real Garcia family. It's my family. The other Garcia family is a hypothetical family, but they are families just like families I've seen throughout my life, growing up in southern Arizona, living for 15 years in San Diego, California, living in South Florida. And this was based on a statement that, remember, Rick Perry said in one of the debates about in-state tuition fees for children of illegal immigrants. So here we go. Although Governor Perry has apologized for calling Americans heartless for opposing in-state tuition for the children of illegal immigrants, he stands by his belief that it's the right thing to do. I'm sure that all of the illegal immigrants residing in his state would agree. But what about the legal residents who are competing for a finite number of admission slots? And what about the legal citizens of other states that would like to come to Texas if only they could pay the in-state tuition costs? It would seem that the governor's compassion extends first to citizens of other countries before those of his own. I have a daughter in California that would like to go to Texas and get, you know, in-state tuition rates. But that's another story. Well, that's part of the story, but it's not in the story. But I'm just throwing that out there. So for the governor's sake, I'd like to compare the differences of two similar families struggling to afford college tuition. The first family comes from a long line of Garcias originating in Mexico City four generations ago. That would be my family. The first Garcias moved into Texas before it was a U.S. territory and gained citizenship legally as it became a part of the United States of America. The father of the modern-day family served in the United States Navy for 22 years and has a daughter who has just finished community college. In-state tuition costs are much higher than community college and will be difficult to afford without some form of tuition assistance. The competition for assistance and admission is compounded by the addition of the thousands of students of foreigners illegally residing in the state. The second family comes from a long line of Garcias originating in Mexico. Sound familiar? And is the first to live in the U.S. They are a hard-working family who came to Texas on a work visa, which expired 10 years ago. The father works in the restaurant industry and has a daughter who has done well in high school and is applying to several universities in Texas. At the in-state tuition rate, and with some tuition assistance via loans, she may just be able to afford one of the universities she has applied to. At out-of-state tuition rates, she won't be able to, and that is the argument for allowing her to pay the in-state tuition rate. It's the compassion. Oh, we're just being mean and bad if we don't allow her to have the in-state tuition rate, even though she technically isn't even legally in the country. Ironically, if she were to return to Mexico with her U.S. high school diploma and good grades, she would be virtually assured of getting into one of the public universities and at a tuition rate of $0 per semester. That's right, free. The University of Mexico is a highly regarded, around the globe, university and has many branches throughout the country. But where is the compassion in letting her return to her country of citizenship for a free education, an education at a highly respected university, no less? For some reason, though, the good governor from the state of Texas thinks that it is the right thing for taxpayers to subsidize the education of a person that could return to their country of citizenship for a free education subsidized by their own countrymen. All the while, U.S. citizens compete against a growing population of non-citizens for admissions and assistance. That's what the governor calls having a heart. The truth is, for the first Garcia family, it's called creating additional hardship. For the second Garcia family, it's called expensive but convenient. So why does the second Garcia family not want to save all that money by sending their daughter back to Mexico to live with relatives or friends and get a free education? Because our way of life is so much better than most every other nation in the world. Our unique constitution guarantees the kind of liberty and freedom that they came searching for to begin with. Unfortunately, they have gained the benefits of citizenship without earning the citizenship. When something precious is not earned but taken, it doesn't tend to be valued. We see the result of this in the Reagan amnesty in California. Second-generation citizens of that amnesty program parading around with Mexican flags and demanding open borders. U.S. citizens acting as though they are ashamed to be Americans and more proud of their Mexican heritage. We'll see more of this across the country if we keep catering to people poaching citizenship. So what's the solution? First, Mr. Governor, give the taxpayers a break by not allowing in-state tuition for illegal immigrants. This is a wealth transfer from middle-class taxpayers to illegal alien families amounting to millions of dollars. Second, give American citizen students a break by not forcing them to compete with children who shouldn't be here to begin with and have a free education waiting for them in their home countries. And finally, please tell us what additional types of compassion you are going to cost us if you are elected president. And that goes for you too, Governor Christie. I wrote that at a time when Governor Christie possibly was going to get in the race, and he's an amnesty apologist as well. So you see, Paula, the problem is these families don't want to send their kids back for a free education for not only the reason I mentioned in the article that they really want to stay here because this is a better country, but two, chain migration. If they can stay here, they can get their toe in the door, they got a kid who goes to college and now becomes a citizen, that kid can now bring the whole family to our country. Chain migration. That's what they're really after. It's not so much the education, it's the chain migration. They have a fabulous education waiting for them back in Mexico. And with the kind of grades they get here in the U.S. and the kind of schools they can attend and get those grades, they can get into those universities, no problem. But they don't, because it's not about the education. It's about becoming citizens here and essentially stealing citizenship. There's only one difference between a shopper and a shoplifter. One is doing it illegally. There's only one difference between an immigrant and an illegal immigrant. One is doing it illegally. The difference between the shopper and the shoplifter is somebody's taking an iPod or a pair of pants or something of value of a few hundred dollars maybe that they can stick inside their dress or pants or purse. Citizenship is the most precious treasure we have in our country. It's worth more than anything else. If I had to tell you or one of my kids or any of my family members or neighbors, sorry, you are being moved tomorrow to another country, and that's where you will reside. And it's not a country that has the liberties and freedoms that we have today. They would give anything to stay here in this country. I would give my home, every possession that I have. That's what citizenship in the United States of America is worth. And we're going to just give it away to people who have attempted to steal it? No, I think not. So Newt Gingrich stepped in it with this, talking about compassion when it has nothing to do with compassion. It's all an effort to steal something that we all highly value and that somebody in our lineage earned. And they earned the right to pass it on. So when my ancestors, whether it be on my mother's side of the family or my father's side of the family, came to this country and became citizens legally, they earned the right legally to pass that citizenship on to all of their children and grandchildren and on and on. But when somebody comes here illegally, they have not earned any right to pass on citizenship to their children and so on. They have not earned it yet. And if they don't earn it, like I said, in the situation out in California, it's getting ugly out there. There is a real militant attitude about the Mexican heritage of American citizens. They're U.S. citizens. And they're They prefer more. I'm telling you, I used to see it in Florida, and I don't see it anymore, thank goodness. But I think people realize what they were doing. You used to see stickers on the back of cars with a flag that said the flag of their country, and it was varying countries. And then it said, mi orgullo. And that means my pride in Spanish. And I asked some of my friends from other countries, I said, if I put a sticker like that with an American flag on the back of my car and say resided in Nicaragua or Costa Rica, Chile, that had an American flag and said, mi orgullo, how long would it be before my car is either vandalized, stolen, or destroyed? And you know what the answer? It doesn't matter what country that I, when I talk to somebody from, and I've talked to people from like four different countries, they said, I'd give it 1 to 2 days. There's no tolerance whatsoever for that kind of disrespect in those countries. But those people come to our country, which we have a tremendous amount of toleration, and they disrespect us in a way that they know in their hearts nobody would ever get away with in their country. That I find that highly disrespectful. I've gotten to learn a lot about many, many cultures in Latin and South America, as well as the Caribbean here, you know, in a place like Jamaica, Man. And I love Latin culture. I really do. But, you know, we've got to look at this from a rule of law perspective. And Newt Gingrich got it completely wrong. So there you go. There's my detailed explanation of Newt's faux pas that is not going to go over with conservatives and particularly the Tea Party.
Sounds good to me.
But yeah, it's good. It's good that we brought that up, and I forgot about that article. I read it on Michael Cutler's because, you know, he's an INS, a retired officer, and I was going to talk about this, and I forgot about the article. But hey, on the Mark Levin show, I think last night, a neurosurgeon called in and said he had just been in a conference in D.C. And when it comes to Obamacare, these government officials and Health and Human Services are already looking at ways to curb paying for necessary services for people over the age of 70. He said, so if somebody has a stroke or a neurological problem that would require some, you know, aggressive care, and they're 70 or older, they're just going to get comfort care. We're not going to actually address the problem. We'll let them just, you know, finish out their life and, you know, be gone. Now, I remember it was a, what was his name? Alan something. He ran District 8 in California, in Florida, and he's the guy that stood on the floor of the Congress. He's gone now, yeah, we got rid of him in Central Florida, Orlando area. But he said, Republicans want you to just die and go away.
How's that crazy?
No, we don't want that whatsoever, and there's no evidence of that. But we now have evidence that the Obama administration and this administration do actually want you to die and go away if you're a little too old. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you a personal side to this. I have a ex-mother-in-law who's a very nice lady, and she had two aneurysms that required surgery, major surgery. The first aneurysm, when the surgery is over, she suffered some form of stroke after, right immediately after the surgery, and they didn't realize it. She recovered from that. About 6 months to a year later, she had to have the other aneurysm operated on, and that was a more minor aneurysm, but they took care of that. She's in her late 70s and lives a very, very productive life. She's not some vegetable sitting somewhere. She still drives and gets out and enjoys life. But if Obama had his way, she'd be gone by now. And yet she lives a productive life and has, you know, two grandchildren and was a foster care mother for many, many years. So there are many, many kids out there who now have their own kids, and they all consider her grandma. So there's the story of just one person in my life. I'm sure there are millions and millions like that out there. If Obamacare has its way, we are going to see the wholesale destruction of very, very important people in our society and a waste of life, all in this name, all in the sake of saving money for this unattainable utopian environment that we want to achieve. And so when Alan, what was his name? Boy, I wish I could remember his name. What a bombastic ass that guy was. Say that again.
Wasn't it Grayson? Alan Grayson?
Grayson, yes. Alan Grayson. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was an ambulance chaser, and he went and filed all kinds of lawsuits on behalf on behalf of people that had gotten injured, hurt, et cetera. But they never got any money. He just did it on behalf of them. That's not really quite the correct legal term, on behalf of them. What he did was, let's say somebody gets injured because there's a pothole or some other thing. He says, look, other people could get injured. I'm filing a lawsuit against the city or the state to ensure that they fix that pothole. So he'd make a bunch of money, but no money ever went to anybody else. It just all went to him. Ambulance chaser, bombastic ass, and he stood on the floor saying that Republicans want you to just go away, and we now have proof that it's actually Democrats want you to just go away. He's a liar. They're all liars, and they will continue to lie to us about what they're really trying to do with Obamacare. So there's an article I want to go into, and I'm going to have to do this quickly because I don't want to take this long. But it's a really good article written by Holman Jenkins. It's in the Wall Street Journal, Business World. I don't know if it's in the paper edition or just the online edition, but this is the Wall Street Journal Digital Network. So if you go to online.wsj.com, you can find the article. And the title is, and it came out today, If Only Obama Had Been This Guy, Carter at least did not substitute his priorities for the nation's. Really good article, so I'm going to run through this real quickly. He makes some really key points on this current administration. Has a president ever arrived freer to choose his own course, to devise his own response to the economic crisis that greeted him in office? Candidate Obama landed with no explicit ideological commitments, at least that he cared to share. He was an icon of something else altogether, and his followers were ready to follow wherever he led. Remember, he said, his old campaign slogan, yes, we can. Can what? What are we going to do? Make change. Change, change, change. Yes, we can. Change, change, change. Well, change what? And what can we do? Well, we're finding out what it can. Destroy our nation, destroy our Constitution. Alas, a few days before his all but certain election, he glibly telegraphed what would prove to be the seminal mistake of his administration, telling Time Magazine's Joe Klein that right after fixing the financial crisis, a new energy economy, that's going to be my number one priority when I get in office. Now, do you remember him saying that? And to this day, and, you know, you're an energy person, Paula, do we have a new energy economy?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I didn't notice. I've been looking around. I don't see a new energy economy. But he said right after fixing, oh, wait a minute, we haven't fixed the financial crisis. That's why we don't have a new energy economy. Well, to continue on here, the financial crisis would not be fixed, but Mr. Obama decided our sagging economy would just have to endure fights over the big ideas he was so determined to implement anyway, including health care, re-empowering labor, readdressing income inequality, etc. Let us suggest a counterintuitive historical parallel. Jimmy Carter also came to the presidency as a progressive Democrat amid a failing economy. He also had considerable freedom to define his own agenda, riding a wave of Watergate revulsion rather than an ideological mandate. But Mr. Carter had served aboard Navy submarines. Yes, he's a classmate, not a classmate, but an alumni mate, if you will, of mine from the Naval Academy. I hate to say it. And yes, he was a bubblehead, and I can say that as a Navy guy. He ran a peanut plantation. He served one term. When I say bubblehead, that's what a submariner is, a bubblehead. So. Those non-nautical people out there, that's what they I don't remember what they called us flyboys. They wasn't flyboy, it was something not great. But, you know, other names for Navy guys are anchor clankers and on and on and on, whatever. But he was a bubblehead. He ran a peanut plantation. He served one term as Georgia governor. Well, look, Naval Academy grad, Navy submarines, which meant he went through the nuclear power school. That's not an easy thing to go through. He ran an entire, farm, plantation, system, et cetera, whatever you want to call that, and he served one term as Georgia governor. Well, my gosh. I mean, compared to Obama's resume, he's pretty much a brain surgeon astronaut. Real jobs that produce real effects. Mr. Carter saw himself in some realistic relation to the world. The world is big. A president, even the president's progressive commitments are small in comparison. It was no part of Mr. Carter's progressive heritage to dismantle the regulatory state the original progressives had erected. But he did so in airlines, trucking, railroads, and partially energy. Now, I want to stop here for a second. I don't agree with everything in this article. Make some good points. Here's what he did by implementing in 76 the Department of Energy. I've added up the numbers as best I can find today, and for the last several years we've been spending $25 billion a year on the Department of Energy, whose goal is, whose sole purpose as outlined by the Congress to give him the money in 76 to even create the Department of Energy, to reduce our dependence on foreign sources of energy. And that has only escalated and escalated and escalated all these years. So I've added up all of the years. We're talking about 35 years worth of Department of Energy, and I come up with a grand total of $341 billion. And I would argue that's all money down the drain. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. $341 billion he's cost the taxpayer with the Department of Energy. But that's a whole other story. The Carter presidency was a mixed bag, but he had the requisite adult judgment for the job. He did not abandon his progressive values, but he could see the obvious that the times called for backing and filling in the progressive project, not charging ahead onward and upward, oblivious to realities. He never got credit for the political calendar, but the Reagan economy was truly built on a Carter-Reagan foundation. Now, I disagree with this, but we'll go with it. Lost amid the shouting, the continuities of American life are often impressively large. Check out Mr. Carter's speech in 1980. Now, this is true, but, you know, if you listen to Barack Obama, he'll say the same thing, and it's an outright lie. But he boasted unembarrassingly and at length about slashing regulations and restoring free enterprise to failing regulated industries. Those are all good things. So Carter talked about that. He could see that was important to get the economy going again. Reagan just compounded on all of that, if in fact Carter even did that. You perhaps see where we're going. Mr. Obama's career has been one in which the main effect has been the impression he leaves on audiences. The main effect has been himself. Familiarity with his country or any other country would be helpful at this point, if only to counterweight his mesmerization with the arc of his personal story. Even at this late date, he could tell his aides, I see the bill coming due for a generation of excesses, and the last thing we need are more excesses. I want growth. I only want proposals that encourage growth. Our economy has great internal resiliency, even with Europe imploding, even with households weighed down by underwater mortgages. Population continues to grow. Families form and need homes. Cars wear out and need replacing. Domestic energy is developing and booming. Manufacturing is enjoying a renaissance. Boeing just announced the biggest plane sale ever. McDonald's is doing great. Yet, his great miscalculation is still to come. His aides are sizing up a re-election campaign that gives up on growth, that resorts to score settling and resentment. His enemies will be the banks, which he bailed out. His enemies will be Wall Street, though the GOP rejoinder will be too easy. Tim Geithner. That's going to be the way to go. Oh, yeah, the evil bad to Wall Street. Now, what about Timothy Tax Cheat Geithner and what he's been doing as an absolute incompetent? You haven't seen him in the news at all. The guy's just hiding.
Oh,
his enemy will be... His enemy will be big business. The same big business whose adaptation to a chaotic global policy environment recently has been nothing short of revelatory. This is triply sad because Mr. Obama just this week was handed a heaven-sent opportunity, a gift beyond his deserts. That gift was GOP or Pat Toomey's tax reform plan floated as part of the super committee deliberations. In short, I'll tell you what it was. We're going to reform. We talked about this the other night. We're going to reform and close the loopholes and simplify the tax code. Well, that all means basically raising their raised taxes. You know, you close all the loopholes and you cut tax rates, but you don't cut them enough to make up for all the loopholes, so we all pay more taxes. So in other words, $500 billion in new tax revenue. Mr. Obama, if he had the political creativity he credits himself with, would now pick it up and run with it, instantly redeeming the super committee failure with an act of presidential leadership. The suspicion comes nigh irresistible, however, that Mr. Obama is lacking in the leadership department as the country stumbles towards its ultimate financial crisis. But give him credit for one world historical achievement. He makes Carter look good. Excellent article, points out some very good points about what this president has done and is doing. And this is about politics and him getting reelected. He's running around campaigning, and it's not my job to get involved with the super committee. Well, other presidents have gotten involved in that sort of thing and made a difference. But you don't understand leadership, and you really just care about yourself. and you'd rather stand. That's where he's at ease, standing in front of a group of people, pontificating about right and wrong, regardless of whether he does it or not, and lying about his record, because he can't tell the truth. His record is abysmal. He cannot tell the truth about his record. It just doesn't work, because his record is horrible. So, let's see. That's all I had. That article I thought was a very good article. Let me just do this real quickly. I'm going to pull up Twitter and see what kind of things I put out in the last couple days, because there were some good ones. But well, what do you think of all that, Paula? Anything to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, and you know, I think more people got to pay attention and listen to what's going on, and pretty much it.
Yeah. All right. Let me see if I can pull up. Now, everybody has to understand, as I broadcast live from Jamaica, man, I've got to – I'm broadcasting over the Internet, so it can slow down a little bit here, slow things down a little bit. Let's see what I've got. Let's see. This was from General McVeigh, who I saw one of his tweets was put out there on Fox News the other day. But he said, I have an easy way to calculate your fair share of taxes, the exact amount that will make Obama happy. How much you got?
Oh, that.
Yeah, how much you got? We'll take it all. Let's see. While Obama, you know, now remember, go to the American Hour on Twitter and you can follow the stuff. I've been a little bit slow lately. I'm getting back into the speed of things here, but I find lots of great articles, and I follow some people, some specific people, who put out some great tweets, and I put that stuff out there. So you want to find out what's going on in the world that you're not going to get from the mainstream media, go to the American Hour. The other thing is on our Facebook page. I didn't say this earlier. The American Hour show page. Go there and click on the like button. We got to start getting more people doing that. And in fact, tell all your friends. Send out a blast to everybody. Hey, go like this page. It helps. It really does, because it draws more attention to that page. It's not just about, oh, look, well, I can sit here and go, hey, I got 1,000 people that like the page. No, it actually draws more attention to the page, which brings in more listenership. Let's see. Another climate gate erupts ahead of key summit, so there are more emails coming out showing what a bunch of dorks, these climatologists that say we're causing global warming. Will Obumbler back a second Egyptian revolution? You know, a lot of people are not happy with the way things are going. There's been a lot of revolting, and what's the military doing? Yeah, they're putting them down, and they're fighting back. So this Arab Spring is turning into an Arab winter, and if it turns into another revolution, what's Obumbler going to do? Back another revolution? All right, yeah, more revolution. I just like revolutions, you know. I don't know. The bell tolls for Obamacare. I've got a link there for a very good article on what's going on with that. Then, of course, the article I just read, I tweeted that out as Obumbler makes Carter look good. There's, if you want to see a photo and read about a Russian newscaster, who really they just read the news, but she's on, you know, she's live on TV. You know, something like 250 million. Russians see this potentially, and when she gets to the point where she talks about Obama, she holds her hand up and flips like she's flipping him off. Did
I'm
you see that?
I'm just looking at that now. I can't believe she did that. Oh, dear Lord. She's a woman.
Yeah, oh, they got their excuses. I don't care.
Good for her.
Yeah, whatever.
That's priceless.
I like it anyway. You know, and then we got Nancy Pelosi whines about Catholics having this conscience thing. She's a Catholic, but she has no conscience. Yeah, she is. She is not only a libtard with no conscience, she's just evil. I mean, you know, can you believe that? She claims to be this, you know, true, faith-believing Catholic, but then she says, but too many Catholics have this conscience thing. I don't know what that conscience thing is, but I don't like it. Conscience. Don't have a conscience. Now, that's probably how she can sleep at night and do the things that she's done. Let's see. The disrespecter-in-chief to Aussie students when he was in Australia, he said, our kids are behind in America. Wow. Has this guy ever said anything good when he goes out abroad? His nominee for again, I've got a link to this story. His nominee for the Social Security Board favors rationing health care. I mean, this guy goes out and finds the most radical leftist people to man the ship. I mean, no matter what it is, whether it's an education department, his judges. I mean, the American Bar Association has said the vast majority of judges that he's been recommending for federal circuit court positions are unqualified in their estimation. They're not happy. So this guy really is just so incompetent. We've got to get rid of him. Anyway, all right, I think I've gone on long enough. What else, Paul? Anything else we should talk about?
Oh, I think that's enough.
yeah, okay. Uncle. All right, well, it's been fun. Good show. I'll give you the last word, Paula.
Well, I thank you for that. Just a quick, short shout-out to our troops serving overseas. I'm a firm believer in the power of prayer, and I'm going to ask that the good Lord hold our troops in your loving hands and protect them as they protect us, and bless them and their families for the selfless acts they perform for us in our time of need. Families love and miss you dearly and are looking forward to most of you coming home for the holiday season.
Awesome. All right, Paula, happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody else out there. We'll see you, everybody. I think, let's see, are we? Yeah, we're around on Monday.
Monday.
Cool. Yep.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Paula.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.